We are here in week 3 of this college football season. We got SMU coming to town 3:30 Saturday afternoon. It is our final tune-up before we hit the Big Ten season. We got Nebraska coming to town next week. Scott Frost. So we'll talk a little bit in this show about what we're going to see from SMU. We'll rehash a little bit about Western Michigan, talk to Tru Wilson, Carlo Kemp, Jordan Glasgow, and a whole lot more. Stay tuned. This is In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
It's different when there's that many people watching you. In that stadium, it's a great feeling.
You can take away the field goals. So I guess that's an area to improve on.
There's a lot of things that we did well and a lot of things we can keep building on, and I really think sky's the limit.
That moment was, it was one that I'll remember forever.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
Well, this week around Schembecker Hall, the spirits are a little bit different than they were last week. There's an old saying that says winning cures all ails, and that is mostly true. You got to make sure that it doesn't cover up any of the ails that you still need to fix. So we'll talk about some of those as we get further into this show. But it is a nice week to be around Schembecker Hall. Everybody's a little bit happier than they were following the loss last week. But as we get in here, let's bring in Brian Bush as we get to our 7 from 77. Brian, how you doing?
What's up, John? Yeah, it's much better this week versus last. Big reason why the running game really took off on Saturday. Why did that happen?
Well, I think the main reason is Western Michigan's front just wasn't very good. And nothing against those guys. I'm sure they worked hard. They did all they could. But our front five, they're big. We finally did a decent job of blocking some movement. We're going to continue to see movement like we've talked about all preseason and in the first couple weeks here. But we did a good job of our footwork. We did a great job of getting movement on that first level, the down lineman, getting up to the linebacker. Brent Bredesen, who was our offensive player of the week, not just the offensive lineman of the week, but the offensive player of the week. And you know he had to play pretty good to get that because there were some other great performances, notably Shea Patterson. So, I think there was good movement up front. And when we talk about good movement at the line of scrimmage and double teams, you got to be hip to hip. And these guys got some big hips. They got them together. They were able to move those down linemen and then get off with square shoulders on the linebacker, which allows your partner to take over that down lineman. And then you can get up on that linebacker. You can square him up and take him where he wants to go. And then the running backs, I thought, did a great job of reading those blocks and getting, right behind the butts of those guards and tackles, making that cut at the last minute. And they were able to get those cuts 1 or 2 yards into the line of scrimmage on the other side of the ball. And when you can do that, those little guys are hard to find behind those big offensive linemen. So it makes those linebackers' job even tougher. They've got to shed those blocks, plus they got to figure out where those little fellas are.
Number two, you mentioned Shea Patterson. What impressed you most about what you saw from him against Western Michigan?
Well, Doug and I talked about this in the pregame show. It was I wanted to see his accuracy, and I thought we were going to be talking about his accuracy after the game. And sure enough, when you look at what he was able to do, and I think the most notable pass was he was rolling off to his left, and he connected with Oliver Martin on the sideline. When a right-handed quarterback rolls to the left, most of the time, most offensive coaches are going, please just throw the ball away. He was able to square his shoulders, get enough on the throw, and be accurate to Oliver Martin. Oliver Martin made a great catch on the sideline to get his feet in. But I thought that was impressive and exciting to see. And then there was a pass, two passes actually, to Donovan Peoples-Jones. Second quarter, took us down to the 1 yard line, but he kind of just sidearmed it. And, it's one of those where he had to make a quick decision, but when he sidearmed it, he was still accurate and he put the ball where Donovan Peoples-Jones could reach out, grab it, but he never broke stride. So his body weight, everything that was moving in the direction that he was going already was able to continue. He didn't have to stop, stutter, do anything like that, allow a defensive guy to catch up. So he caught it on the run, full stride, kept going, got knocked out at the 1 yard line. Actually took a monster hit, and it was good to see him pop up after that. And then the touchdown pass to Donovan Peoples-Jones in the you'd call it the southeast corner of the stadium. It was a beautiful pass right over the top of his head, shoulder, and into his hands. And he was able to get his feet in as well. So his accuracy is what really impressed me about his performance on Saturday.
Number three, John, What second teamers stood out to you the most from their performances down the stretch on Saturday?
Well, I think the number one guy would be True Wilson. He has done a great job, and we're going to get a chance to hear from him later in the show. But going from walk-on to scholarship player, six carries, 54 yards, he did a great job of taking the yards that were there. And he was running behind a line that had Jalen Mayfield, James Hudson, who are also young guys that got in there, got some reps, and had a chance to see what things look like in the big house, you know, and make sure that the scene wasn't going to be too big for him. And it's a great way to ease some of these young guys into it. Another guy that I really have to mention is Aiden Hutchinson. And we've seen him a little bit this season, but you're going to start to see him more and more. And I love it that we have a game like that. Hopefully SMU should be another game like Western Michigan, where we should get up and see some younger guys. And, you know, this young fella is 6'5", comes from, you know, Michigan lineage. Chris, his dad, great football player, great defensive lineman. And Aiden, the thing that impresses me the most about him is that he has come in, he's a highly recruited player, and at practice, in games, you see the same intensity, the same speed. He is going 100 miles an hour all the time, and he is listening to Rashawn Gary, he's listening to Chase Winovich, he's listening to Greg Madison, Don Brown. He's trying to soak it all in, and he is going to be a guy that we're going to be talking about a lot in the coming years.
Number four on today's edition of 7 from 77, you talked about SMU. What have you seen so far from the Mustangs? What do you think will be important going into Saturday?
Well, I think it, much like this past week, it's not a matter of what SMU brings. It's a matter of what Michigan brings to the table. And SMU is going to be fast. They're going to run around. They're going to try and do some things. And you're probably going to see some trick plays so that they can try and get a score early, maybe stay in the game for a little while. And they did build a little bit of confidence against TCU last week. They were in it in the first quarter, and they had some weather issues. But SMU is very much the same as Western Michigan in terms of their talent and what they bring to the big house. So it's going to be a matter of Michigan has to come out like they did last week with high intensity and great execution. They have to look at the film and see, okay, here's what we did from Notre Dame to Western Michigan. And we need to take that another step. We need to go from, you know, what we did in the running game. We took some great steps. What we did in pass protection and in protecting Shea Patterson, we have to improve upon that, because when you look at the film, there was a missed touchdown to Sean McCune. Again, in that same part of the field that I just talked about with Donovan Peoples-Jones, the southeast corner, where he was wide open. But Shea was rushed, and he overthrew the ball. You can't have lapses like that. When you have guys open, you have to hit them. And that's what I want to see the improvement from week two now to week three, is to fine-tune some of those things that we improved upon, but we have to keep making steps forward. So SMU, again, it's not about what they're bringing. It's about the intensity, the execution that Michigan brings on Saturday.
Let's go broad strokes here. Number five, what teams have impressed you most in the Big Ten so far this year?
Well, you know, and nobody wants to hear it, especially if you're listening to the podcast, but Ohio is a team with a lot of talent. They're playing. They've got the mindset that it's them against the world, and it'll be interesting to see what they do against TCU. We'll have a common opponent after this, TCU and SMU and Ohio and TCU. We'll see how they do against them. So it'll be interesting to see how they, you know, move forward in this last game without their coach Urban Meyer. They'll obviously get him back, you know, the following week, but they've got a lot of talent, a lot of speed, and you know, what everything that they've done from they've really just continued over the past couple of years to continue to replace players. J.K. Dobbins, their running back, Weber, a great 1-2 punch out of the backfield. And then when you look, you know, it's unfortunate, the Big Ten West, there really were some tough games. You know, Purdue losing to Eastern Michigan, Northwestern losing. It just was, you know, disappointing, because we all knew that the Big Ten West was going to struggle and be kind of the weak part of the Big Ten. But Wisconsin is a team that continues to impress. Their offensive line is the best, in my opinion, offensive line in the country. And with the running back and the running game that they have, they can really put anybody back there and be extremely productive. So, but the disappointing part is that we're not really going to know what Wisconsin is until they come to the Big House, and that'll be what October 13, I believe it is. So it's kind of one of those wait and see in terms of what comes out of the Big Ten West.
Number six, nationally, what has stood out to you through 2 weeks?
When you look around the country, some of the great traditional programs, Florida State, are really struggling, and Florida State just, you know, they had to come from behind last week against a very poor opponent. You know, they get a new coach, and that's interesting and in and of itself, but it's difficult to see those programs struggle, because for college football, you want to see all those traditional programs be good and be competitive. I loved watching that Clemson Texas A&M game. That was a unbelievable. And I think one of the things that we saw with Clemson is, from here on out, they don't have another ranked opponent on their schedule. And will they be tested enough? Will they be able to improve enough to be ready when it comes time for the ACC championship game, when it comes time for possible playoffs? If they slip up, which they have done last year against Syracuse, 2 years ago against Pitt, I don't know if they're going to have the strength of schedule when the playoff committee gets in there and says, hey, you know, how are we going to evaluate these teams? They're going to really struggle on the strength of schedule. So it's a very interesting. And then obviously in the SEC, you've got Alabama, king of the hill right now, playing extremely good football. Two great quarterbacks, a very good defense, an amazingly good running game. They just continue to reload. And then Georgia, I tell you what, they put the smackdown on South Carolina. So watching those teams in the SEC, watching Clemson, the standard is there. The standard is set, and Michigan, the Big Ten, has to rise up to those standards to be able to compete when it does come time for playoffs.
And then finally, on 7 from 77, 17 years ago this week, John, the attacks of September 11th took place. Curious what you remember from that, because in 2001, you were playing for the Washington Redskins. Of course, the Pentagon was one of the places that was attacked during September 11th. What do you remember from that time, that day, and really that whole season?
Well, being so close to the Pentagon and you know, being directly affected by it, you know, especially in the NFL, they postponed all those games. So on Tuesday, it was our day off, so I was at home having a cup of coffee and watching the news, and they had said that, you know, a plane had run into one of the towers. And you know, at first, and everybody had the same reaction, was, I can't, this is such a tragic accident, can't believe this happened, we're trying to figure out what went on. And then, you know, and this is going to sound real hokey, but I'm sure there's a few other people that saw the same thing. When the second plane hit the tower, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, how is this possible? Terrorism wasn't something that was an everyday event or an everyday concern in our lives at that time. And September 11 changed that forever. And it will always be something that we're concerned about. And I was sitting there looking at it going, how is it possible that two planes could possibly run into the same building? I never even entered my mind that somebody would do that intentionally. And, you know, we know what followed in the hours and days after that. And obviously the Pentagon was hit as well. And as an organization, the Redskins organization, we went down to the Pentagon and handed out water to some of the you know, first responders and those that were clearing the debris. And I just remember looking at it like, it doesn't seem real. It's like somehow I got stuck in a movie script that was, you know, some disaster scene, and it just didn't seem real. And even to this day, when the monuments have been put up, and you go there and you have this moment where you're looking at the building and you still see the hole in the side of the Pentagon and the rubble, and I can still, you know, the smells, everything that was going on was, it was just so surreal. So it is a day that Americans and really the world will forever remember, because it changed the way that we think about our own personal security and the freedoms that we have.
Were you scared going to that first game on the road at Lambeau after the attacks, or the first game back home at FedEx Field? Did fear ever come in because you were in a place with tens of thousands of other people?
You know, I never felt that way. And this is a completely selfish answer. Football has always been my safe place. It has always been where I've gone to feel the safest. And so whether I'm in the locker room, I'm on the practice field, I'm you know, with at the football facility, or I'm in our stadium, whether it's ours or another stadium, it's just always been my safe place. So I didn't feel, you know, threatened at that time. I didn't feel in danger. And one of the things that I do remember was it was the first Monday night game after the tragedy of 9/11, and we had a flag that covered the whole width and length of the field. And, you know, Green Bay was holding on the other side. We were holding on our side. And it just was one of those moments, again, that you will never forget because it was so it was just so emotional. We ended up getting blown out in the game, which, you know, didn't help at all. But it was just that night. That moment was one that I'll remember forever.
Pretty powerful stuff, John. We appreciate you sharing. And no easy way to transition onto the rest of the podcast, but that's 7 from 77. And we've got some good interviews for the show today, don't we?
We do. We've got Jordan Glasgow coming up. He's, again, another walk-on and a guy that comes from a long line of walk-ons. A couple of guys, his older brother's playing on Sundays. Carlo Kemp, who is a guy that's been bouncing around on the D-line, finally got his first start, played extremely well. He'll talk about the value of knowing where the ability to play all those different positions. And the guy that I talked about a little bit ago, True Wilson, he's going to give you his story and talk about how he's going to stay and continue to move up the depth chart. But without further ado, here's Jordan Glasgow. Jordan, second year on scholarship. What does it mean to you to come here as a walk-on and to earn a scholarship?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's a great privilege, no matter where you are, but especially at the University of Michigan, the great program that I'm in right now, and just receiving that scholarship is just an acknowledgement from the coaches that say, you provide this team with something that. You need to be compensated for that, and they're just giving you that acknowledgement that you really wanted since you came here.
And one of the things that coach talks about is what you bring to the team is, whether it's in the game or in practice or in the weight room, it's every play, every down, you're going 100%. How do you keep that intensity going all year long?
I mean, I guess it's just a mindset that I've had from a very early age. And, coming as a walk-on, as someone who, was kind of on the lowest part of the totem pole when you first get here, you don't really have the opportunity that a lot of other people have to take plays off. You'll have players that are on scholarship coming in early. I'm not saying that, it's a bad thing. Scholarship players are scholarship for a reason. They have a tremendous amount of talent. But, you get less reps than them, especially starting out. So those reps mean a lot to you, and how you do should mean a lot to you. And, effort is the one thing that you can control.
When you do walk in as a walk-on player, you walk into training room or the training table for the first time and you see the amount of guys that are there, what's your initial reaction? What's your feeling at that point?
You just kind of need to find out where you belong in that. There are a ton of guys. A lot of people, may feel that you don't belong there or that, you're kind of just on the side. And you just need to, make sure you let people know that, I came here, I'm a good football player, and, I can compete with anyone else that's here.
Was there a point as a senior in high school where you thought, maybe I'm going to try, I can go somewhere else and be on scholarship to begin with, or was it always, I want to go to Michigan and I want to get there any way I can?
I had no intention of coming to Michigan, throughughout high school. My brothers went here. That didn't really have, a profound effect on me in terms of where I wanted to go to college. But I had some MAC schools looking at me, NIU, Western Michigan. And, after like they wanted me to make up my mind, you know, around signing day. And I said, you know, signing day isn't relevant to me whatsoever. I'm going to take my time with this decision. And, you know, a few days after, you know, I got a call from Coach Madison, the defensive line coach, and he basically just said, you know, well, you have a preferred walk-on spot here and we'd love it for you to come here. And I said, in that same phone call, I said, I'd love to.
Is there one thing that you would tell a kid, because there's a lot of kids that are in that same position where, whether it's a scholarship at maybe a MAC school or a smaller school or a preferred walk-on or a walk-on at a Big Ten school or a Power 5 school, is there one piece of advice that you would tell those kids as they're trying to make that decision of what's best for them?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of situations will differ greatly. You know, I had the opportunity based on, you know, what my parents were able to give me to come to the school without a scholarship. And, you know, if some people aren't in that position, and, you know, their family or them going to college is dependent on them having a scholarship somewhere, you know, obviously it's important for them to take that. But, you know, education was very important to me and my parents, and, you know, having the opportunity to come to one of the best academic and then athletic universities in the country, you know, it just was very appealing to me. And, you know, you just need to look at what's important to you is what important to you, the academics, you know, the prestige of the football program, and, you know, where that will put you after football or after you graduate, whether you want to go on to the NFL or, you know, do you want to go and play immediately? You know, there are a lot of things to look at, but it's very specific to each individual person.
Where are you at in your academics right now? What are you studying?
I'm currently in the business school.
Okay.
Doing finance and, you know, whatever classes, I guess, are on my schedule. But, you know, I'm just, you know, doing the football and academics thing, and, you know, it's difficult but rewarding.
Yeah, it seems to be working out pretty well on both sides for you.
Yeah.
When these guys come in as walk-ons, how much does special teams play into just having that opportunity to get on the field and then parlaying it into where you are right now in a Viper position?
Coming as a walk-on and, you know, getting on the field, I mean, that's your first goal.
Right, see, you just know, get on the field.
Just get on the field any way possible. Special teams are, it's probably the best opportunity to do that because, you know, a lot of coaches don't like putting starters in at that because they like to get rest for the offense and the defense. And, you know, special teams is a little bit different. You know, someone can be an outstanding wide receiver, but, you know, they're not going to be very good at grabbing someone and blocking them for, you know, punt return. So there are a lot of like small things that you can be good at that can really shine on special teams. And then, you know, once coaches, you know, see you out on the field, see you performing and see that you're, you know, a trustworthy individual on the football field that can perform, it makes it a whole lot easier to kind of make an impact and get on the field on, you know, the defense or the offense.
Now, you've also been a big part of the kickoff coverage, and I know last year the kickoff coverage was number one in the nation. How much of a sense of pride do you, as a unit and yourself, take in a stat like that?
Well, you know, being on, you know, a team or, you know, a part of a team that is number one in the country, and, I mean, I played a little bit on defense last year and we were number three in the country. Mm-hmm. There's obviously an enormous amount of pride that comes with that, and, you know, you want to stay there, and that's the most important thing. So, you know, you go out, you have to have a specific mentality every time you go out. You know, with kickoffs it's a little weird because, you know, it can easily go in the end zone and there's a lot of, you know, uncertainty of whether the play is even going to happen. So, you know, you need to attack every single play as if, you know, it's the most important one.
You and Kalik play that Viper position. What are some of the challenges? Because it's kind of that hybrid safety, linebacker, rush sort of guy. What are some of the challenges that you have in that position?
Well, you know, you do a lot. You cover, you blitz. You have to, you know, be very good in run, like,
support.
Run defense,
yeah.
Run support. So, you know, you just need a very well-rounded individual with good instincts. And, you know, Kalik fits that bill very well. I think I fit that bill well as well, but, you know, it's just like, it's a mixed bag. You need to be, you know, try and be, you know, a master of all.
Yeah.
So.
When I was reading an article and it was talking about how you guys, you'll watch film together and help each other out. That's really, you know, that's something that when there's a competition at a spot to get on the field, you would think somewhat of the opposite. But at Michigan, it's always been, we need to go out there and win. It doesn't matter who it is. How do you guys handle helping improve each other in the meeting room and on the practice field?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have any animosity towards Kalik for, you know, being the first string and me the second string. You know, I want to see him do well. He's my friend. And, you know, if I see him do something wrong, you know, I'll say, like, you know, what are you doing? Like, you just get your hands on him or something. And, you know, he's a very good player and a very smart player. He already knows most of that. But, you know, just getting some advice from one of your friends that plays your position can really just help cement things and just kind of, you know, urging each other to do better. You know, it's very helpful in improving, you know, your overall game.
What's the feeling now? You've got one more. I always call them preseason games, just because it's a pre Big Ten games. What is it that you want to see the defense and special teams do in this last game as we approach Nebraska and Northwestern and we get into the Big Ten season?
Defense and special teams had a very good game.
Yeah, they've been outstanding.
Yeah, so, you know,
that's why I'm asking. I'm looking at it going, when you look at the defense, I mean, it's been, what, two field goals in the last six quarters?
Yeah.
I know Don Brown's got to say there's still areas we've got to improve upon.
You can take away the field goals. So I guess that's an area to improve on. But, I mean, you know, there are always things that, you know, we could do better. There, you know, are picks that we probably could have had if we were in better position. And, you know, and every single play, there's a tremendous amount that you can improve on, you know, depending upon, just because the play turned out maybe in like a -5 yard loss, you know, if that didn't happen, you know, someone might have been out of position, who knows. So, you know, you gotta fix everything with every play.
When you get together with Ryan and Graham, what's the conversation? I mean, you guys all played at Michigan. You guys all walked on here. You all earned scholarship. Is there a competition as to who had the better career at Michigan?
I mean,
there's got to be brotherly love there.
I mean, those guys are more competing for that, I would have to say, right now. I mean, mine's not finished, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm pretty sure Ryan started as a redshirt sophomore. Graham also started as a redshirt sophomore, I think. So, you know, they're kind of beating me out in that.
Yeah, but you started some games too.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I don't know. But, I mean, we don't necessarily talk about football. I mean, football is such a, like, big part of our lives. But, you know, it's kind of when we get together, you know, we don't want that to dominate, you know, the time that we spend together. So, you know, normal brother stuff, make fun of each other, you know, play video games, just, you know.
Do you get a chance to watch them on Sundays?
Yeah, I do.
What's the give us the report? How did Ryan do? He's still with Cincinnati, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So week one critique of Ryan and where he's at right now.
I mean, he did well.
Yeah.
I haven't necessarily asked him how he played. I know he had like four or five tackles, and you know, if I ask him, there's going to be he's going to think there's going to be a lot that needs to be improved on, which, you know, I hope if you ask any player at a high level, they say that they, you know, need to improve on a tremendous amount of stuff. But, you know, I mean, as his brother watching him, you know, I'm extremely happy for how he's doing.
Yeah.
So.
And Graham, obviously, he's here in Detroit. He's close.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get a chance to go on Sundays to see him play, or is it all Michigan football at this point?
I think I went once last year, and I'll probably go again this year. You know, like I said, when we're kind of together, we don't really talk much about football.
Yeah.
You know, and it seems that's all our parents and, you know, grandparents want to talk about.
Well, so. Mom and Dad and Grandma and Grandpa got to be awful proud.
Yeah.
So, well, I appreciate you stopping by. Best of luck this week against SMU, and I'm looking forward to seeing some more great plays.
Thank you.
Carlo Kemp joins us. Carlo, we got your first start on Saturday. How'd it feel?
It felt good. It was a total out-of-body experience. Couldn't really believe it, walking out there for the first defensive series and getting to put my hand in the dirt with the guys I've been working with this whole offseason.
Well, it's been a bit of a process. I mean, you're a guy that could play all four spots now up front. That's obviously added a lot of value and into what you can do. But how difficult has it been to learn
all those different spots in Don Brown's defense?
It's been a challenge just because at every position they've got their, you know, their special movements, their different reads, and everybody, you know, does different things. So, you know, it can get kind of confusing when I, you know, go in, I'm the three tech, and then two plays later I'm the nose, and then they trade, yeah, and it's a blitz, and then I'm thinking out there, what do I got to do now? But, you know, I just made sure every day in camp I just was heavy into that playbook, because when I stepped onto the field I wanted to be trusted and make sure I didn't mess up anyone else's opportunity on the defense.
Now, is there a, I know for me as an offensive lineman, going from the right side to the left side, different hand down in the dirt, makes a bit of a difference. Is it that big of a difference for the defensive lineman, or is it naturally what you guys have done your whole life is played across the front?
At defensive end, I felt really comfortable going back from the left side and right side. Early on in camp, and then even on later days, I had difficulty being on that left side just because I'm right-hand dominant. It felt good being on the right side. I felt like I could come off. On the left side, I couldn't align right. I couldn't do anything right for some reason, maybe more mentally.
Yeah, well, for me it was too. I mean, if I was on the right side, I heard, you know, 24 for us was a run, and I'd be doing the same thing for, you know, year after year after year, and then all of a sudden I line up on the left side, they say 24, I still go to the right.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly how I would feel.
Does this guy not know his right from his left? So, what in terms of just being inside now, how different is your world? Because for me, again, tackle. All right, I'm out on an island. I know what I've got. Inside, when I play guard, it's tight in there. There's a lot going on.
Mm-hmm. A lot can happen. And, you know, exactly that defensive end position, you're on that island. You know your matchup the whole game. You got the tackle. And you mirror what he does. He goes down, you go down. He's passing, now you got to beat him.
Yeah.
On the inside, everything could look like a run to you. You know, you've got the guard coming, the tackle coming. You got to make sure you play that guard. Because if you don't, that tackle is going to come. He'll take you back into your linebacker. Uh-huh. Or if your guard leaves, now you got to watch out for that center coming. You know, you got to watch, be quicker, and you got to make sure your feet are ready to go every single play.
What's it like playing for a guy like Coach Madison, who prepares you for exactly what you're talking about?
Oh, man, it's a challenge, but you just got to trust every single thing he does. There's nobody better than him at teaching D-line. And you got to believe in everything he's teaching you, because he will prepare you. All he wants for you is just to be successful. He's going to prepare you for the game. He's going to give you the keys, and you just got to take the coaching. And if you take the coaching, you'll be successful.
What's if there was one thing that you wanted to improve on from Western to SMU, what would it be for you and your game?
Going forth into this third game, probably just transitioning from, okay, the guard is not run blocking me anymore. Let's work on a pass, mm-hmm, on a pass rush now.
People, I don't think, really understand in the middle of it how fast things happen. How quickly do you have to make that run to pass adjustment?
Oh, you got to be quick, because on the three tech, you got to work from the B gap to the A gap to fill up rush lanes. And if you don't do that and you keep playing run, sure, you could knock them back on a run 5 yards, but here comes the quarterback running right up the middle to where no one is. You got to be able to make that transition, because ultimately you got to help the entire defensive line. You know, if I make that transition, B gap to A gap, now he wants to go outside, he'll run right into our defensive ends.
How much has playing all those positions helped you understand the total concept of the defense? I knew when I was at tackle, I saw things a certain way a whole time, and then I went inside and I was like, oh, okay, now I understand why we're doing all this stuff. How much has it helped you understand what Don Brown is trying to accomplish as a whole on defense?
A lot. It's really helped me really grasp the depth of what every single play does, mm-hmm, you know. Now I know all the movements on the D-line, and it makes sense, because why? Now here comes a linebacker to fill this lane, and now I understand why he's going here and what I can do. It helps me make me better. Like, he's coming into the A-gap, so now I can't counter there. I can get a free, quick release on the outside B-gap. It's really helped me to understand the entire defense and what we're all trying to set it up. If the pressure's coming from the left, that means maybe I can widen out a little bit on the right.
Mm-hmm. And what's it like to play with, you got two talented guys outside you, Chase Winovich and Rashawn. What's it like to play with those guys?
It's awesome. You just, you know, every single play I was out there, I just wanted to make sure that I can make them be successful. And by doing so, you can, you know, knock back the guard so the play can run outside to where, you know, he is right there. Boom. he can get his tackle right there. Or, you know, pass rush, forcing it outside to where our two very talented ends are.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I hate to bring this up, but how mad were you when they kicked that field goal? I mean, you guys had the goose egg, and I was on the sidelines going, oh, he's going to... And then Ambry blocked it the first time.
I know, and I was on the sideline going crazy. Yeah. I was like, yes, you know, we get to keep that perfect shutout going. Yeah. But when I seen their whole transition from offense to the special teams, I was a little upset as well.
Well, I appreciate you stopping by, and congratulations on your first start. I know there's a lot more to come.
Thank you so much.
True Wilson joins us on In the Trenches. True, I don't know even really how to start this, but you have worked your way up from being a walk-on. Now you've earned a scholarship here in your third year, and you're seeing time on the field. It's got to be a great feeling.
It really is. It's like I've really waited my turn, been patient through all the ups and downs, and it's been a long path, but it's all paid off this year.
And Coach talks about all the different areas that he's seen you improve on, and it's not always just yard production, but it's pass blocking. It's, you know, when you're making your cuts. How has your game progressed over the 3 years? Because you didn't even start out on offense, correct?
Right. I started out. I came here as a safety.
Uh huh. Yeah. How did they convince you to move?
I was my first year as during camp. I was playing safety, and I didn't get many reps at all, and I think I mentioned it to Coach and one day, and then a couple days later, while we were warming up, stretching, I had my defensive jersey on and everything, and he said that day, just, how do you feel about switching over to running back? And that day I was with the running backs.
So it's an opportunity to carry the ball. It can't be for me, I came in as a tight end and moved offensive line, so they took the ball out of my hands. So it had to be fun to have the ball put in your hands.
It's I like it. It's not safety where you can go up and hit people, but it's a different dimension of the game. But I mean, you can hit people in blocking and chopping people, all that. But yeah, I like it.
You know, you had what, 6 carries for 54 yards last week, long of 17. When you line up, all right, and you see all those big bodies in front of you, and you know your number's called, you're going to get the ball. What's going through your mind?
Protect the ball. Protect the ball, protect the ball, protect the ball. I know I can run. I know I have the ability to do these things. I just can't think too much. Just got to go out and do what I know what I can do.
One of the things Coach talked about was making your cuts closer to the blocks. What were some of the coaching points that Jay Harbaugh has told you as to how to make that happen, the running backs coach?
Just being able to just trust the hole, trust that the linemen know what they're going to do, and be able to just get their guy out of the hole and just trust it, press it up in there and make a play out of that and not veer off out of it.
When you come in as a freshman and you're a walk-on, and I asked Jordan this just a little bit ago, what's going on in your mind when you walk in and you see all those scholarship guys, you see 140 players that are you know, there at the start of training camp, and you come in as a walk-on? What's your mindset at that point?
There was a point where it was a little intimidating, like, am I ever going to see the field? But I knew what I was capable of. I know what I had in me, and I really wanted to play. Like, I really wanted to step in between the lines during a game, and then once I got a taste of that against Illinois my freshman year, I got one carry for 1 yard and kind of garbage time, but I was like,
greatest yard of your life.
Yeah, I was just, once I got a taste of it, I just wanted more and more, I really enjoyed it and made me just love football. And it's different when there's that many people watching you, like, mm-hmm. And in that stadium, it's a great feeling.
And is that what drives you, this the want to have more and get more opportunities?
I think the drive is just to prove to myself that I can do this, and that walk on or not, or just recruited or not, just that I'm able to compete with these guys, the guys that are at this high of a level, and I can do this.
When Coach, how did Coach tell you that you were going to have a scholarship this year?
last year he told me that I was in the running for it, so it gave me hope that this is paying off, that all this hard work is paying off, and that I am noticed. And so once he said that, I was like, man, I just got to keep working, be consistent with everything I do. And then I knew I just had to stay healthy during camp, perform. They have to trust me to be able to know what I'm doing inside the lines, and
they're going to trust you with the football,
right? Exactly. Trust that the quarterback's behind me, and that I'm going to be able to block my guy, know who to block, know my assignment, and so during this camp, I knew that the scholarship was lingering in my mind, but honestly, the depth chart was the biggest concern for me. And then the scholarship was one of the rewards for it.
I know they talk about the walk-on nation, and there's been, you know, there were 74 guys that played this past weekend for Michigan. 18 of those guys started their careers at Michigan as walk-ons. You guys have your own, you know, little group that you guys, you know, have, encourage each other and talk about what they've got to do if a young guy comes in as a walk-on and obviously sees what's possible. What are you telling that young guy?
You just gotta be consistent. Like, you can't make a good play and then take a couple plays off or have a missed assignment. You gotta be consistent with everything you do. You gotta show the coaches that they can trust you. Show them that you're capable of being the athlete that can compete at this level. It's not easy, especially at the University of Michigan with the guys that they bring in. But consistency is the big thing.
When you come back and watch film now, and you talk about that drive to always want more, what do you see in your game that you say, okay, this is what I've got to do next to get more opportunity on the field?
I just got to keep my confidence level high. Like, I watched some of my runs, and I saw things that I could do better, and I just got to keep showing the coaches every day that they can keep trusting me, keep putting me in there, and earn every play that I can get.
And, you know, at Michigan, it's always, you know, not just at Michigan, but anywhere, you're one snap away from moving up or you know, in effect, moving down. And if there's a young guy that's listening right now, even some of our guys on the team right now, but just what would you tell them is in terms of – just you got to be ready at any moment. When the coach calls your number, you get that one opportunity, but you may not get it again. What would you tell them how to be ready for that moment?
Just be prepared. Mm-hmm. Like, take every minute in the meeting room serious. Make sure you're on top of your stuff. Make sure you're mentally prepared for it, because one of the biggest parts of the game is just mental, knowing your assignment. And that helps you play faster. And once you're prepared for that opportunity, then just your physical abilities will take over.
What do you think the possibilities for this team are after, you know, what we saw against Notre Dame, then coming back with a big win against Western? What do you think the possibilities are for this team?
I really think the sky's the limit. Like, we're watching the Western tape. There's a lot of things that we did well, and a lot of things we can keep building on, and I really think sky's the limit.
Well, I appreciate you stopping by. I know the sky's the limit for you, and I'm excited to watch you play the rest of the year.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks to Jordan, Carlo, and True. They have started classes, so to fit in a little time with me, I really appreciate the effort that it takes for those guys to do that. I also want to thank the Tailgate guys. Do you want to simplify game day at Michigan this fall? The Tailgate guys can help by providing reserved tailgate packages, conveniently located on historic Ferry Field, steps away from the big house. Tailgate guys' affordable packages include tents, chairs, coolers, ice, catering, and dish media options. Tailgate better this season. To reserve your spot, call 734-680-5170 or log on to tailgateguys.com. Now let's get back to Brian. Brian, we got some questions from Twitter.
We sure do, John. As always, you can send us tweets, emails, texts throughout the week. Tweet at JohnJansen77, email MichiganWolverinesRadio@gmail.com, or text 734-328-1760. Kirby asks, in your opinion, at what point is it safe to start pulling starters? Does faith in the reserves have some bearing in the decision?
Well, it does, but you also have to put those guys in early enough in the game. I actually would have liked to have seen them a little bit earlier in the game because, you know, two of the guys that I obviously watch, Jalen Mayfield, James Hudson, Steven Spinelis, that offensive line that went in there, when you go in there fresh, technique looks good, you feel good, you're confident. When you get tired, that's when you have to rely on muscle memory and is my technique true? Is this something that I do no matter if I'm tired or if I'm fresh? And if you go in there for just one or two series, you don't really get to that point where you're tired. Yeah, you're excited, and that can play a factor as well. And you got to make sure you have good technique in that situation, you know, as well. But you're going to be more tired, and your technique will break down after you've been in there for maybe a quarter and a half. So, you know, when is the right time to put them in? You never really know. It's more of a feeling on the sideline. You could be up 28-0, and it still just doesn't feel like you can get to your reserves yet. Other times you could be up by three scores and it's time to empty the benches. So I wish I could give you a tried and true answer, but when you are in control of the game and you control the line of scrimmage, then you put those reserves in, all of a sudden you can't see a huge drop off. And to give you a little story or example, my fifth year, we played Ohio State, we lost, and then we went out to Hawaii. We actually played another game after the Ohio game, and we had the game in control early in the first half, but we played through the first half. The reserves had gone in. Coach Carr didn't like what was happening. So next series, hey, starters, you're back out there. You're always still have to be ready to go in the game. Fortunately for us, we had A-Train in the backfield. Our offensive line was pretty decent, and we went one play, 80 yards, and we're back out. So that was an example of it seemed like the right time, but the guys that went in weren't ready or just it didn't work out well. Put the other guys back in. Make sure you have that game in hand. Then you can start going back down the depth chart.
You played a game in Hawaii? How was that?
It was awesome because I was of age. I'll just say the eating establishments don't close until about 4 a.m. So we had a great time. And at that point of your career too, I mean, I only had a bowl game left. So you feel a little bit more, let's say, at ease to maybe have a couple practical jokes on maybe a coach or two. that's story time for another episode, so stay tuned.
Oh, come on, John.
Hey, that's one thing I've learned in the radio business is how to tease, how to get them back.
All right, I'll get you refocused on an offensive line question from Josh on Twitter. With the way the current line is structured and it could potentially be shifted with some of the young guys, Hudson and Mayfield, getting some run, should this team go mostly gap or mostly zone blocking in the run game?
You know, so far it's been a lot of zone blocking, and they're doing a really good job at it. So I wouldn't get away from that. I would throw in some gap blocking, some schemes just as a changeup, because you can never go wrong with running downhill. But then you also look at our backs, Chris Evans, Caron Higdon, True Wilson. You go right down the list. We don't have the A-Train, the Tyrone Wheatley, the big, powerful running back that's just going to, you know, put his head down, and whether there's a hole there or not, he's going to make one, that style of back. So we've got some guys that are very good at reading those zone reads, making those cuts, and I think Caron and Chris both did a great job in that game of getting to that block, reading it, and making the cutbacks. So it's one of the things that I talked about needed to improve. After the Notre Dame game, I thought there was a couple cuts that Caron missed, but he was able to make those. And obviously, the birthday boy had his birthday on Saturday, was able to make some big plays out of it.
David on Twitter, is there a possibility for Don Brown to change his scheme to accommodate for mobile quarterbacks who tend to burn us with their legs?
Well, that's the question around college football, because so much of college football is revolving around a dual threat quarterback. And I don't necessarily think that his scheme needs to change at all. I think when you look at what happened against Notre Dame, Brandon Winbush is a very mobile guy, and this is obviously a question regarding that. I think that you just have to be disciplined. You can't leave your responsibility because you think you've got a chance to make a spectacular play. That's not your spectacular play to make. You have to fill your role, because if you don't, if you get out of position and you miss on that play, now all of a sudden he's 17 yards for a first down and everybody's wondering what the heck's going on. So it comes down to discipline. Don Brown his defense is extremely sound. He doesn't leave any gaps, any holes, anything open. He may vacate a gap with a guy, but he's going to fill it with another one. So, no, I don't think he needs to adjust his scheme to accommodate any type of quarterback, because if you've got a sound defense, you should be able to defend anything that an offense has.
Frank on Twitter asks, Shea wasn't under center as much. Your thoughts? To me, he says, Shea can match Drew Lock numbers if Jim Harbaugh plays to Shea's strength, which isn't under center, and with a developing offensive line. Your thoughts on that?
Well, Shea isn't a guy that, you know, he came from Ole Miss where he wasn't under center very much, and he was under center a little bit, but he's also not a 6'5 quarterback. So if you're in that position and you're back there in the shotgun or the pistol formation, now all of a sudden you've got a little bit better view of the field. He feels very comfortable in that position, and he's already in his drop. So if you, instead of a three-step drop, he's already 4 or 5 yards deep. He can take one step, unload the football, and it allows his offensive lineman in a quick type protection to fire out and treat it as if it's a run. And that's going to help the offensive line with their protection. When you can be aggressive, that helps everything up front. And so when Shea gets a chance to see the field, see where the blitzes are coming from, see where the pressure's at, and it helps a little bit being at home, because you can verbalize things to your center, to your offensive line. He was probably under center a little bit more just because of the crowd noise, and he just needed to physically be closer to his offensive line to talk to him. So I think we're going to see a good mix of under center and shotgun pistol formation as we move forward.
Aaron on Twitter, which past Michigan quarterbacks would you have liked to seen get coached by Jim Harbaugh outside of himself? Aaron says his would be Denard or Devin. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I just taking those two guys, I don't know that Denard would have been a quarterback. I think he would have been, much like he was in the NFL, a wide receiver, running back, athlete type of guy, because he was an unbelievable athlete. Devin, I would have really liked to have seen him, under Coach Harbaugh, and seen what he could have learned, because he was a tall guy, had a good arm, big hands, and was a smart guy. So I think he would have flourished in a Jim Harbaugh offense. I think another guy that I would have liked to have seen in some time would have been maybe Drew Henson. I had a chance to play with Drew, and we had great quarterback coaches at that time as well. But I think Drew was a pro style quarterback and very similar style to Jim Harbaugh, and definitely the same confidence. So I think it would have been interesting to see what Jim could have done with a talent like Drew Henson.
Jackson on Twitter, he says everyone's talking O-line, but he believes an overlooked concern is our inconsistent field goal kicking. What's your take?
Well, we're 1 for 3 right now. And we've missed one, we've had one blocked, and so it is a concern. And Coach addressed it on Monday in his press conference. It's things in the special teams are going extremely well. We've had a blocked punt by Kalik Hudson. We had a touchdown return, kickoff return by Ambry Thomas, and so those things have been great. Our kickoff coverage has been excellent. We've got to have points on the board when we have the opportunity to be close, and we don't punch it in terms of 6 points. We have to be able to get those three, and they're going to be unbelievably important when we get into the Big Ten season. Just remember, was it 2 years ago Wisconsin came to the Big House, and it would have been much easier, one, if we had punched the ball into the end zone, but we won that game because we were able to kick field goals, and that's what sometimes it comes down to. 3 points is better than none, You always want six, but you've got to be able to put points on the board.
And then a last second tweet coming in from Brian on Twitter. What are some stories of you playing a practical joke on coaches in Hawaii?
All right. Let's see. I'm going to have to trace that Twitter. I think it's coming from Winston-Salem somewhere. I'll tell you, I'll get into it. We'll go to a little story time right now. What we would do was, which, you know, you would think we were 4 years old. Aaron Shea and Steve Frazier, Mark Campbell, Jeremy Tooman, all these guys, we would knock on Terry Malone's door and run away. Who, by the way, Terry Malone is now the running backs coach at Western Michigan, and was not happy after the game on Saturday. But good, obviously great to see him. I digress a little bit, but you know, we would run around the corner and he'd come out and he'd, you know, cuss and swear a little bit, and he knew what was going on, but he couldn't figure out who it was. And so then we do the same thing, but we do it to Coach Carr. And when we're running away, and I can't remember who it was. It was probably either Aaron Shea or Steve Frazier. But as we're running away from his room, we absolutely just tackle him, you know, knock him against the wall and knock him down so that when Coach comes out, we're all gone. And one of those guys is standing there like, you know, caught with his hand in the cookie jar. So may not seem like a great practical joke, but at the time, we thought it was hilarious.
I've heard a lot about Aaron Shea. Was he one of the biggest jokesters that you had as a teammate?
Aaron Shea is a great character. First of all, Aaron Shea was a great football player. He was a great teammate, but he always seemed to be him, Steve Frazier, Ty Streets, always seemed to be up to something at some point. So if something happened, your initial reaction was always to blame one of those three guys. And chances are you were going to be right 95% of the time. But love those guys. Great, great times with those guys.
All right, John, I got the story out of you. Brian on Twitter did.
Yeah.
So my time is done. My time is done. Good work.
Well, I appreciate it. And I appreciate everybody listening. Make sure you spread the word in the trenches. We'll be here every Wednesday for midweek update of what happened, what's going to happen. We'll also have a post-game show, which I think we are able to get out about 4 or 5 hours after game time. And they just announced the Nebraska game time, which will be noon in 2 weeks, which is outstanding. Love noon games. So we'll get that one out before everybody gets a chance to go to bed. You can catch post-game interviews, coaches interview, and my recap of the game. But appreciate everybody tuning in. We'll be back next week on In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen. In the Trenches with John Jansen is an exclusive presentation of IMG, America's home for college sports.